Hey guys, just a quick note before we start episode 80 with Michelle Lobo. Had a little bit of an issue with the audio, so we switched from using a Skype call, which we usually do, to a telephone call. So that's the explanation of the first 5 or 6 minutes, a little bit of an audio issue. Just wanted to give you the heads up. Thanks for listening, and away we go.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. I want to thank all of you guys for helping us out and sharing the show, especially after last week, which was graduation week. You can help us out by following us on Twitter. That's at PT Pintcast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. On the show today, she received her MPT from Hanneman University and her movement science PhD from the University of Delaware. She's been a visiting researcher at the Free University Amsterdam and the University of California, Berkeley. Her research focuses on developing and testing early interventions and devices to maximize participation, play, and learning. Her NIH and DOE-funded group has members from rehabilitation, developmental psychology, engineering, and fashion, and recently developed the first exoskeletal garment for rehab. Her current work includes a multi-site study in developing and testing a range of low to high-tech clothing aimed at increasing independence and function. Welcome to the PT Pintcast, Michelle Lobo.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
We learned about you with a presentation at school. Cole Galloway came to town and gave his presentation on his Go Baby Go, and he happened to try to throw some mentions your way. That's how we crossed paths, so I want to welcome you to the show, and I am having a St. Arnold Ale. Just got back from Texas, went down there for a wedding, and I typically pick up beers from wherever I'm on vacation. I usually buy one or two and kind of sneak them back. So doing the St. Arnold Amber Ale, and I try to have a different beer with each episode so I can expand my beer horizon. So thanks very much for coming on the show, and I'm interested to hear where this came from, because I don't even want to say the name of the group that you work with, because I wanted you to say it. It sounds a little bit like Go Baby Go, but it's different, right?
So we have a sister organization, Go Baby Go. Cole's a really close colleague, as is Sam Logan, who works with the Go Baby Go group. So we have a very similar model, and that's getting kids moving so that they can be social, they can make friends, they can learn. Movement is really important for us across the lifespan for all of those things. You can become really isolated if you're unable to move. So that's our model. Our philosophy is the same. Also, our philosophy of accessibility is the same. You know, we don't want to make devices or technology that people can't access because they're too much money or they're too hard to get or you have to wait too long to get them. We are partner organizations that have very similar philosophies. The program that I lead is called the Super Suits Program. It's a functional fashion and wearable technology program. And what that means is people are always wondering, what do you mean by functional fashion? And you don't know because we made up the term, because we felt like we needed it in the area of rehabilitation. So it comes from the idea that when people design things for you, anything that goes in your body, your headset you have on now, if you use a walker or a mobility device, your clothing, your watch, your shoes, all of sort of these portable environments that you put on yourself and you move around. But when we design to the general public, we think of things that are really important to the people using them. So we think about how they feel, how much they cost, what they say about who you are, all these types of things to the people that are going to be buying them. And so if you don't address all of those issues, and all of a sudden people won't buy them, and you're going to be out of business. But sadly, if you look at the medical device market, it's a really different model. It's almost like we have this captive audience, and we don't care about their global needs. We care about function. So we make a device that functions for you, but we really don't care about what it says about you when people see you with it. So if we give you a cane, it's usually people will look at you and they say, oh, there's the person with the cane. They sort of perceive you differently. If you're in a wheelchair, people are either afraid to approach you or they kind of look at you like, oh, I'm so sorry. They might even come up. We had a parent panel last week in my pediatrics class, and I was really shocked to hear how many people come up to kids and parents of kids with disabilities. And just because there are disabilities that you can see, people feel the need to come up and say, ah,
feel sorry for you. God bless this child. You know, no one wants to think that there's something wrong. And so we think that there needs to be this idea of having these devices, these portable exoskeletons, whatever it is that you're putting on yourself, having it actually be something that you want to wear, something you choose, just like if you went to the store and picked out your watch or your shirt that you have on today, something that says about you what you want to say about you, not something that says there's something wrong with me. So it's this idea of fashions that help you, and they're functional and they help you, but they still are fashionable, and they express what you want to express about yourself, and they're pleasing to look at.
You mentioned something earlier in terms of being behind the ball. Cole had brought it up in terms of mobility, what it does psychologically and socially, and when you start to take that away, you can fall behind, especially as a child, but even as an adult, if you can't function and you can't move, you're not going to be able to catch up with your peers, and that's going to affect you all over. That's going to affect all different parts of your life, and I don't think I thought about that until Cole's presentation brought it up, and that's where this comes in. I mean, I've had patients in an outpatient ortho setting need to wear an orthotic, and the woman would say, I'm not wearing that because, you know, I don't like the way it looks. It doesn't fit into the shoes that I want to wear. She doesn't wear it. So what am I supposed to do? That's, she's missing out on some of her function because it doesn't look good.
Yep. There's actually scientific literature that says the same thing about prostheses. So if you give a man a prosthetic, the thing that's most important to him is how it functions. He doesn't necessarily care as much about what it looks like. And this is just in general, of course, but women care most about what it looks like, and they will sacrifice function to have it be aesthetically pleasing. So it's really interesting because we had the same experience that you had when we started working with an exoskeleton that was available on the market for kids, and it was 3D printed, and the kids had to wear a plastic trunk brace and then this plastic skeleton, and the young kids, moms were really bothered because people were looking at their kids differently. They didn't look at them and say, oh, look at the cute baby in the shopping cart. They looked and said, is that thing on your baby?
Right.
You know, and then you have to keep stopping and telling people, have this perception there's something wrong with the child. It's already hard enough going through school. You do not need different in a way that you don't want to look different. So we had a device option to help you move your arms. This exoskeleton was great in terms of function. People refused to wear it. They chose to have absolutely no arm function, to not be able to lift their arms against gravity rather than wearing this thing.
Wow.
So if that doesn't drill your head that these other needs matter, I don't know what does. Choose not to have a limb, not to wear a prosthetic, or they'll choose not to be able to move their arms if you don't address these other needs.
All right, just had some audio problems there with the Skype call, so we've dialed her in via this thing called the telephone. Some of the kids may have heard their parents talk about it. It's what we used to talk to each other with before there were cell phones and text messaging. So you were just talking a little bit about people just sacrificing the ability to use a limb because it didn't look good, because it looked a little bit weird or it was cumbersome. I mean, we see it all the time. There's plenty of females in my PT classroom that, you know, will wear these high heels and go through an entire night of pain because it looks good. And that's got to be frustrating when you know that device that you've made for them will restore function in the limb and they won't use it.
Yeah, and that's when you need to make the choice. Are you going to be right? Or are you going to do something that's going to benefit your client? You can be right and you can make a device that functions and then you can offer it to people like we do in our catalog. That's our typical model design and accessibility. You get to pick out your ugly metallic thing, then you get it. You spend a bunch of money and you wait a long time and you get it. And if you don't like it, you don't use it, what do we say? You're non-compliant, right?
Right.
We don't say, well, why isn't this person using their prosthetic limb? Or why isn't this using their walker? Why isn't this person wearing the orthotic that I wanted to give them? And what's wrong? If we know that it functions and it can help them, what's wrong with the device? How could we change it? And that's called a feedback loop. And that's what people do when they design things for you and me. But for some reason, we don't much when we're working with these captive audiences, this captive medical population. We make something that functions without asking them, what do you want it to look like? What do you want it to feel like? How easy do you want it to be to use? You know, how do you want it to interface with you? We don't ask them these questions. We just make it function, and we think that should be enough when it's not enough for the things that we buy.
Just making it pink or blue or green isn't enough to make it fashionable, to make it look like you'd like to have it represent you out in the world. Just by throwing some color on it, you've got to ask the person who's using it a really important question. Hey, why aren't you using this thing that works, that's going to help you? What's the problem? So asking that question and being receptive to that answer, that's got to be a big help.
Yeah, and it's hard. it's hard to do because it means that you can't do the easy making something that works and ending right there and being on your own in your lab. It means that you actually have to be interacting with people and constantly changing what you made and maybe changing something that you thought was going to be perfect.
Right.
But then you try it on somebody and it's not quite perfect, giving up this idea of what you think might be right.
Right, because you've solved the problem for whatever it is. You've restored function to that limb and you're like, well, I'm done, except if they're not using it, they still have the problem.
Yeah, and it's at the heart of everything we do, because what do we always say is really critical in PT? It's drilled in every class you have, I'm sure, and that's doses. You know, home exercise programs, getting people to do things every day, that's what changes your behavior. So if you give them a device, it needs to be a device that they can use for high doses, that they can use on a regular basis, that they choose to use on a regular basis. And so sometimes, even if you have to sacrifice a little bit in terms of device function to get the aesthetics and the comfort and the ease of use, that increases your dosage from maybe 20% of the time to 80% of the time, that is well worth it.
So this is what's in your head when you're designing a device, when you meet a patient or there's a patient population that you need to design either a low or high-tech solution. How did So Baby So begin? Was there a particular patient or a group of patients you were working with where you said, hey, I've got a solution, how can I figure it out and make them want to use this device?
Yeah, so it started with kids who have a diagnosis called arthrogryposis, and these are kids that in utero, something happens 6 to 8 weeks in utero when you're supposed to be moving a lot, doing all these spontaneous limb movements and developing the muscles and the bones in your body in response to those movements. Something happens and they have diminished movements at that point in time, which just kind of sends them on this spiral of less movement, poor muscle growth. And when they're born, they have a really hard time moving against gravity. So they often have strong trunks, but really weak limbs. And they can't lift their arms against gravity. So we don't really have a mechanism to strengthen you in moving against gravity if you're an infant, because we don't do ESTIM with you. We can't explain to you how to do isometric
right.
exercises. We can't keep you in a pool all the time, you know, and do high doses of aquatics. So we don't have any tools, but recently we started working with this Wilmington robotic exoskeleton. This is a 3D printed exoskeleton that you wear a plastic TLSO, a trunk brace, to support it. And it's hard plastic piece pretty much then all over your trunk and all over your arm, sort of like the Iron Man kind of look. And it's the only exoskeleton that's available for kids. And there are different groups you can get this from. We don't have any other choices for exoskeletons right now, or at least we didn't at the time. Now there's an open source version. We wanted to start working with this, and what we found was that right away, it increased the space that the kids can move their arms in. So it was really functioning, and people were so excited. Parents were crying and sending us these videos of their kids for the first time ever playing with toys.
Wow.
Really excited. But then after about a month, it was like this excitement kind of like weaned down, and people were not as excited and actually transitioned to, after our study period, not even using the device anymore. So then it was like, oh my God, what just happened? These kids were not able to move their arms, had something that helped them, everybody was excited, and now the parents made a conscious choice not to use this thing at the end. And so then it became a question of, you know, are you going to actually ask them why, or are you just going to blame them?
Right.
And so, of course, because we're trained as PTs, I think this is where we have an advantage in terms of design. We are not married to anyone's advice. We're married to whatever is going to work for our patients. You start asking what was wrong, and the parents were saying things like, you know, it wasn't safe. They couldn't roll around on the ground safely or, you know, transition from sitting to supine or supine to prone.
Because it was so hard?
Because it was this big, hard, bulky thing.
Right.
You couldn't roll around in it. You couldn't transition. It didn't fit in the car seat. It didn't fit in, like, the little bouncy seats they use or the high chair. For some of the kids, they didn't have any crawling mobility, but they could roll to get around. But if you can't roll with it on, then you're making parents choose between arm mobility or whole body mobility. So it was a whole list of reasons. I mean, I can tell you the more reasons: temperature regulation, discomfort and rubbing on the body. There were all these reasons that they had that you could very easily, once you hear them, realize these are really valid concerns.
Yeah.
This is not apparent that is non-compliant and making a bad choice for her kid.
It's hard enough to get a kid into a car seat without a TLSO on. Now you've got that on there, and that's a pain. That's hard.
Yeah, and kids don't stay in one spot, right? They go between all these devices.
Right.
And then the other thing was sort of the nurturing aspect. As soon as a baby starts to make a little fussing, you immediately want to rub the baby on the back or, you know, touch the baby, and you couldn't do that. It was like there was a shell around the baby, and you couldn't nurse the baby, you couldn't nurture the baby. So there were a lot of real problems with it. This is keeping me up at night because I thought, oh my God, what do you do now? Like, these kids need help to move. We had a solution. That means there has to be another solution that maybe meets these other needs as well. So that's when I started getting fashion folks involved and engineering folks and trying to figure out, could we meet this challenge of making it an exoskeleton, bake it into a soft, comfortable garment. So a little baby onesie or a little shirt that you wear around that nobody would have to even know it's an exoskeleton.
Right.
And you could roll and you could be comfortable and it would fit in everything that you need fit in, and you could still rub baby. So that's where it all started. And so that was our first foray into these functional fashions and wearable technology, was making an exoskeletal garment for young kids.
Now, I like the fact that you bring in the other disciplines. You're not saying, well, I'm just going to do this all myself. What you're doing is you're saying, I'm bringing in developmental psychology. I've got the PT. I've got engineers. And, oh, yeah, let me bring in some people who know about fashion. So you're bringing everybody's strength together to make it for the patient. You're not just solving the PT problem. You're working on solving the full gamut, the psychological problem, the engineering work, the fashion work, along with that, solving that PT problem. So I think that's why you guys have such a great success.
You know, you do these PT podcasts because you like to learn new things. We, by nature, like to learn new things. When you're around people from completely different fields, it makes you question why things that you would just take for granted.
Right.
And it is exciting because we all have different perspectives and something really unique to claim.
So what did the first creation look like? I had seen some pictures of some of the early prototypes, but I want you to describe to some people the really innovative ways that you solve some of the problems on both ends, both making sure it did that function, but also making sure that the baby would fit in a car seat while wearing it. You could still rub your baby's back while they were wearing it. You guys got really innovative between all those disciplines to solve this problem, and you did it in a low-tech way so people could afford it too.
Yeah, so we have a DIY manual materials list on my webpage, and that was our goal, is to, it's always our goal to go as low-tech as possible. If we can't solve it low-tech, then we'll go a little bit fancier than that. But we wanted something that was going to be accessible because kids grow out of these things pretty quick. And
right.
The exoskeletons that are available run for about $12,000 a pair.
Wow.
And they'll last you maybe 6 months when you're really young. And you'll only use them for a small portion of life at all. People need to know that when they're making that kind of financial commitment. So what we did was we played around with a bunch of different materials, a bunch of different ideas for pathways of how the materials could run along the body, ways that we can make things fit. And in the end, we came up with this solution that worked really well. And it's just taking music wire and bundling it together in some heat shrink wrap tubing. And we slide it into a little tunnel that runs under the arm. So as you can imagine, what happens is the bundle of wires under your arm wants to stay straight. So it would be supporting you with your arm completely raised up in the air in a straight position. But then when your arm, the weight of your arm comes down on it, it bends that little insert. And what happens is you can move around anywhere because it's a cylindrical insert. It doesn't limit you from moving into abduction or adduction, up or down, flexion, extension, but it keeps bringing you back up. So you can kind of decide based on how weak the child is or how long the child's arm is. You can make the inserts match the amount of assistance that you want to give to the child. And that is really important to us because we want these devices to be rehabilitative, not just assistive. We want you to get stronger across time and not have to use these. So if we can give you progressively less assistance, then we make you work more each time you use it.
And that solves part of the PT problem, which is, I don't want to just make this device that's going to do that action for this child or this patient. I want to make it therapeutic. And by being able to grade that, I'm essentially using piano wire and threading it through some clothing. And it's able to be flexible but strong at the same time and not do the action, but help. That solves a lot of problems right there.
Yeah. so it eliminates some of the need to work against gravity. And it's almost like, you know, I try to explain to people, what if you can't do a full sit-up? What do? You go part of the range. Well, what if you can't lift your arm against gravity? Well, the kids just work really low. So if they're sitting there, they just move their arms down by their hips in this space where they can't actually see their hands interacting with anything. And visual motor learning is really important in infancy. But we can't expect you to do the full sit-up if you have never really done a sit-up and you're not strong enough.
Right.
So we can't really expect the kids to lift their arms all the way up so their hands are in view. So what do? If you just keep waiting for that to happen, which is unfortunately what we've been doing because we don't have any tools to help these kids. So we wait the entire first year of life for you to get strong enough to move against gravity. And guess what? Big surprise, you never get strong enough because every day you're not moving. It's like coming to somebody on bed rest and asking them to get up, and when they can't, saying, okay, I'll be back in a few months and I'll try again then. But all we're going to do is keep stretching you and making sure you don't range. Well, if you're not strengthening, you're not going to get stronger. You're going to get weaker. This is a really nice tool to help the kids move against gravity in a way that they couldn't move without it, and then to build their strength across time. We hear these awesome stories from families. So the kids show pretty much no active range of motion early on against gravity when they're in pain. And then by about 6 to 8 weeks into our study, we hear these great stories about things like kids lifting up buckets of water and drinking the dirty bath. And mom's crying, they're so excited, you know, and they're like, I never thought I'd be that happy with a kid drinking the bathwater, but my other kids did that, and I had to tell them, don't drink it, that's yucky, but I never had to do that. You can kind of turn around and leave these kids and not watch them, and you know they're not going to do anything. But we want the kids to start making trouble. We want them to drink the dirty bathwater, try to put their toys in their mouth, and you have to tell them no. That's how they learn. So we hear all these really good stories.
We've heard some similar stories from Cole Galloway with Go Baby Go, and saying, you know, I never had to worry about my child getting into any trouble because they have mobility issues, and then we put them in these cars or they put them in the harness systems. Next thing you know, the parents are saying, well, man, now I've actually got to pay attention to my baby. And they say that's the greatest problem to have because now your baby's being a baby.
Yeah, exactly. And even worse, being a toddler. So being a toddler.
Yeah.
Right? So the toddlers, babies are usually, they try you, but as soon as they're a toddler, they can move around on their own. They can test you. You have to be on every second. Yeah, you just don't see that oftentimes for kids to be. Their parents have it easy in that way, but then they really are missing out on all these other types of things, and the parents are so happy when they have the ability to tell their kids no and to have them make the same types of testing that their other kids have made.
If somebody wants to find out some more information about this, you mentioned the DIY patterns. Where can somebody go to check out more information online about So Baby So?
Yeah, So is a student organization at our university that wants the community to make clothing, adaptive clothing for people. The Superfoods program is sort of an all-encompassing program that does the low-tech to the high-tech. And you can find out about that on my faculty webpage at the University of Delaware under Michelle Lobo.
Okay. And I'll
You scroll all the way down, the DIY manual is right there.
And I'm going to put up a link to that on our blog that will accompany this podcast at ptpinecast.com. Just click on blog, and then you can check that out and download some of these DIY manuals. You guys have a lot of stuff up there.
Yeah, we do. And I'll tell you, the stuff that we're doing now is I am trying to get everybody's brains, because it's really fun for us to work with these people from other disciplines. It's also equally rewarding for them, because if you talk to these engineers that have worked with us and the people from fashion, they are so excited to actually be working with people and to be making a difference for people. Because they often are just in the laboratory or making things for mannequins.
Right.
And they really love the idea of having tech. So I've gotten a lot of people from these fields drawn to this idea of making wearable tech for people. So I love that, because then I just put them on the case for items that our kids have and their parents talk about. Now things that we're playing around with are sort of even higher tech things, like playing with sensors in it, and the sensors are simply the seam. So using conductive thread, you can make a seam that is actually a motion sensor, and when someone moves, then you can use that to send a signal to control things in your environment, like your mobility device, your communication device, your computer, your video games, whatever is important to you that you want to control.
Wow.
So we're playing around with some of this higher tech stuff. Even the idea of making exoskeletons that are sort of soft robotic exoskeletons where users can control exactly where their arms are in space so they can function better. And I have some really cool colleagues, really knowledgeable, that I'm getting in on work and some types of things, harnessing everybody's intellect to work on for our kids. And that's been really fun.
Where are you getting your ideas now? Because I've seen organizations like this spring up, and it really is great, especially with social media and connection. When a story like this comes out, of course it's going to spread because it's what they call in marketing, it's sticky. It's going to get viral. It's going to stick. Where are some of the places around the country, around the world, that you're actually getting people saying, hey, how about this? Because that's got to be a great feeling when someone comes to you and builds on an idea that you've had and says, hey, how about this?
Yeah, and that comes from all over. And most of it is that we have these amazing communities of parents of kids with disabilities, and they are sort of the glue holding together. They watch the news from all over the world. They'll find things like recently there was a community college out in California that 3D printed exoskeletal device for kids to help them move their elbows and kind of figure out good solutions to help kids eat better. Because that's a real big point of their elbows to eat better. And so as soon as that news story, within a half hour of that story breaking, I got four different emails.
Wow.
From families who we've worked with that said, hey, have you seen this? Connecting on Facebook with people, connecting, keeping in touch with families. That is the most critical, to make sure that we are always keeping in touch with the users. And then we start meeting people. They hear about our stuff over news stories, online, and they contact us, like, in terms of engineers and fashion folks. They get in touch with us that way through other colleagues. There's really a growing momentum for this, number one, because there's a need and it's really rewarding, and number two, because the government grants that they're giving out for research, it's getting very hard to just make a basic science project that doesn't have impact on people and impact on health. And so people who might have before done just engineering projects or wearable tech, they're focused on the technology, they can't leave it at just that. They have to be trying it out on people. And so there's a really nice match there between what our families need and the technology that these guys can develop. And that helps us to all have a better opportunity for grant funding mechanisms, too.
It's just one thing building on another, and it's spreading. It's great when that information comes back to you. People aren't just sitting around waiting for you to tell them what to do. They're coming to you saying, hey, check this out. Why don't we do this? That's got to be a great feeling.
Parents send me drawings all the time, like, hey, I just had an idea. What do you think about this? They make a drawing of their own brainstorming idea. They take a picture, and they email me. Like, and that's what we want, because it's certainly, like I said, we are not the experts. Experts are the entire team putting their information together, and the families know more than anything about what they need. People will send me, you know, like, hey, I was just thinking about it, and I was noticing my door on my screen porch door. You know, like, it kind of has this day where it's up in different positions before it closes. It doesn't close all the way. Wouldn't it be cool if you could give, like, using the same type of mechanism? Someone will look at, oh, wait, that mechanism. You know, so you start noticing the world around you in a different way when you identify what your problem is, and try to think of these cool ways to solve it.
Wow.
There's tons of families and therapists across the country that call and talk about these things, and I'm all about sharing information, because I think the second you start hoarding something, whether it's your idea or your product or your design, that's when you're going to fall behind. You can't keep up. You've got to be able to share your information with people, use everybody out there as part of your research and development team, and just be ready to let your stuff go. I don't think that people are going to get rich off of this stuff. And so that's not my goal. My goal is, if I make something and you can't get it, that defeats the entire purpose of why we tried to do this.
And we're PTs. We want to solve problems. And if I figured out a novel way to solve a problem in clinic one day, and I can leverage this thing called the internet, and somebody, you know, in California, 3,000 miles away, can figure out a way to use the same thing, then that's great.
That is great. And it's fun to see. Like, I get calls from PTs so often. I have all these half-hour phone calls with people across the country talking about their experiences and how these things can be useful for them. And so it's really fun, like, the age of technology and the way that information can be shared with people. It's amazing to think that even just in the past 10 years to 15 years that, you know, you can get information out in a way that you didn't get it out before. And I don't think I ever really thought about trying to call people that were in the field when I graduated from PT school. And then my students all the time, you know, if you find somebody's information on the internet, an expert on something, give them a call and ask them. Most people would want to talk to and would want to help you. You know, and I think that that kind of connection, I think the internet helps to bring that about.
It takes geography out of the equation and puts people together. In case you want to reach out for Michelle, it's malobo@udell.edu. I want to take a quick 30-second break, and when we come back, I want to know where this is going to go. I mean, I think you guys have come really far, but I do not at any point think that this is as far as you guys are going to go. So I want to see what's in your head for the future, So Baby So. And we've got a mutual connection in the country of Costa Rica. We'll talk about that in 30 seconds when we come back on the PT Pinecast with Michelle Lobo. Don't move.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This is the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast proudly supports Enable. Enable is a global network of volunteers who use 3D printers, design skills, and personal time to create free 3D printed prosthetic hands for those in need. The hands are provided free of charge to underserved populations around the world. Enable is not a company and does not sell these devices. They are a network of people. If you are in need of a hand or would like to be part of Enable, visit them online at enablingthefuture.com. Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. DJ, please. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
And we're back on the PT Pintcast. I want to thank Michelle Lobo from the University of Delaware for coming on and talking about So Baby So. And just to remind you guys, in case you were looking for more information about that, you want to hit the World Wide Web, I've got a link to the site online at ptpintcast.com in our blog section. We'll have that lined up for you right now. So we have a little bit of a connection in terms of a project that I just got back from about a month and a half ago with my school, the class of 2016, Marymount University. And we just graduated just a couple days ago. Feels weird to be...
Congratulations.
Thank you. It feels weird to be almost done, to be almost that guy who's getting a job. But we did a service learning trip that the school's been doing for about 6 years to the country of Costa Rica, and you got a Costa Rican connection as well.
Yeah, so I'm married to a Costa Rican, and so all my in-laws are in Costa Rica.
You must hear the phrase "Pura Vida" every 5 or 6 seconds.
Yeah. We go to Costa Rica. I have two sons, Alejandro and Carlos, and we go to Costa Rica to see all their cousins and aunts and uncles and my mother-in-law. We head there at least once a year to see everybody, and it's a great place to be.
That's a rough life to go to Costa Rica once a year, huh?
I know. When people talk about going like to the middle of the country or, you know, Montana, these cold places to see their in-laws, and I'm like, yes, I have to go to Costa Rica to see mine.
That's rough. Well, one thing that you had brought up earlier was 3D printing, and that's actually something that we had played around with before we went on our service trip to Costa Rica, and we actually 3D printed a hand using some blueprints from an organization called Enable, and we actually brought a working forearm, wrist, and hand down for a patient. So you had mentioned 3D printing earlier. Is that some part of the equation for So Baby So, something that you guys are testing out and playing around with?
Yeah, so first of all, Enable is awesome, and that model is awesome because what they did was the online cook, like, recipe model.
Yeah.
So you put your recipe for your vegetable soup, good to start, but it's not great. And then the users go through and they do all this R&D, and they make the hand even better, even better. They add these ingredients to the soup, and at the end, you have a product that's even better than what you started with.
Yeah.
So I love that model. I also love that 3D printers are not that expensive anymore. They're easy to access. And there are some open access directions on how to make your own $12,000 version of the $12,000 exoskeleton online. But the way we play around with 3D printers is a little bit different because the materials are hard and we're trying to go softer and more comfortable.
Right.
So we play around with soft robotics. And so if you look at, like, MIT has out toolkits on soft robotics, and you can make molds out of your 3D printer. And you can design the molds any way you want. And you fill them with these composite materials that are sort of like rubbery and soft, and you end up making these ladders out of them. So we use it to make those types of things, and you can actually design your little bladder so that it could either expand when it's filled with air or that it contracts. And you can find online these cool videos showing how they can contract because they have these little grabber hands that can pick up balls when they fill with air, and it's really interesting to see. So I think that that is the wave of the future, these types of soft materials for things that you're wearing in your body. And the 3D printers can allow you to make kind of unlimited numbers of designs.
Wow. I'm just starting to get my head around 3D printing and how that... I sat there and watched the first time we printed something and just stared at it as this box is moving around and making a three-dimensional object, and now you're throwing this information in terms of 3D soft printing, and yeah, it makes complete sense. Especially if you're going to be interfacing with a human body, you don't want to have to wear a hard shell.
Yeah, but you can design your soft shell exactly how you want using the hard shell.
Wow, yeah. That is cool.
Just to mention along the similar lines, like even right now, their exoskeletons have transitioned from being these hard, dull Iron Man looking things to actually being fabric-based now. Everybody's starting to realize that if you're putting something on somebody's skin, you need to think about how bulky, how heavy, how comfortable it is, how it allows heat transferred. So I think that textiles are really the way of the future.
And that's a cool model that you guys had set up. Were you involved with the fashion department at the University of Delaware before that? Or did this give you a reason to kind of walk down the hall and say, hey, I've got an idea that you guys might be able to help us on?
Yeah, so this was just me trying to make connections there. And I've been really blessed because I have now all these great connections at my university, with the University of Minnesota. There are some amazing people in fashion and apparel across our country, and I have been really lucky to interact with some of it. So that's all new. That's just trying to find people and really connecting with. And now we're doing things like, you know, once you get everybody together in the same room, it becomes more than solving the one problem. You realize right. There are a lot of problems you can solve by having all of that expertise together. So now we're doing everything from designing garments for in the NICU that allow people to nurse babies or have skin-to-skin contact with their babies in a more discreet and comfortable way, all the way up to higher tech things. Like, you could think about, you start thinking, well, why is it have these hard orthoses? You know, you just said somebody didn't want to wear them because she couldn't fit in her shoe. And that's a really common complaint. They're hard, they're bulky, they're uncomfortable, they're hot, they rub. Why are using that type of material? Because now there are really new advances in textiles using chemicals or fiber bodies that you can actually change the stiffness of material to give a little bit more stability. So for instance, there's a guy at our university who made armor out of a cotton material.
Wow.
So it feels and it flows like a typical shirt. But if something hits it with a really high speed and a really high force, it becomes rigid.
Wow.
Like armor. And so he's working with the military now. So he has these videos online, these crazy videos of how he goes at it with an ice pick and he can't penetrate it. Or you shoot it with a bullet and the bullet can't penetrate it. Yet the rest of the time, when it doesn't have those fast, hard forces on it, it's just resting and it's normal and it's breathing like your typical fabric. So you could see that these kinds of advances have really cool implications for rehab. You know, maybe we're almost at the end of hard plastic braces. Maybe we can start looking at textiles and you just have a pair of socks that gives you that amount of mobility but flexibility to help you move the way you want to move.
Wow. That's some stuff that you figured just come out of an X-Men movie, but you're telling me this stuff exists now. And then, as you mentioned a minute ago, you get a bunch of people in the room who know about this material and have designed this material, and you say, oh yeah, I've got this way that you can use it that maybe you never intended, but would be really, really great for my patients.
Exactly. And that's what the role that we usually play in the team is, people have these really cool materials or really cool inventions, and they don't know how people need them. They don't know how they can suit their needs. And we are always the ones directly connected with people, seeing what the challenges are that people face. And so we're the ones that come up with those ideas.
Wow. Beyond the most space-age things, you mentioned the piano wire, which is the low-tech end, but solves the problem, makes it therapeutic, to the material that can take the blow of an ice pick but still flows like cotton. Where else can you guys go? What's coming up for the future with So Baby So and these ideas?
I think that what we want to do is change the way we think about these types of devices that we put on our body to support. So we're thinking about getting rid of these hard plastic support structures. Okay, even go back in time and learn from corsets and other types of things, clothing that has given you stability with the new types of advances, textile science, and putting that together to maybe get rid of these hard plastic braces. Big focus that we have. Another big focus is control environment. Thinking of ways that your clothing can acceptance, sense of muscle activity, sense whatever it is that you can control, and allowing you to control things in your environment so that you can better communicate and interact with people. I think that those are all really important goals for the people that we work. And then allowing for user control in the exoskeletons, because the exoskeletons that I'm talking to you about today are passive, and they don't give you variable levels of assistance unless somebody actively changes those levels of assistance for you. So having something where you could control where your arm is in space on your own without relying on somebody else, that I think is really important for our users. So we're playing around with those kinds of skills. And then just thinking about clothing. Tommy Hilfiger does the first line of clothing for people with disabilities. Just thinking about types of fasteners and using magnets instead of buttons, or the way the fit of your pants is over, if you have to fit over orthoses.
Wow. Or
if you have limited arm range of motion or spasticity, having a little bit wider neckline and a little bit lower sleeve actually can allow you to dress yourself and be more independent. Those small changes can really impact people in a big way. So helping those things become more mainstream, those are all important missions for us.
Especially with letting people be able to come on your website, see an idea someone else had, adapt it for themselves or their patient, and then play around with it themselves and say, be able to come back to the group and say, hey, what about if you change this to this? And it only builds on each other. The ideas only improve when more and more people start to use them. I think this is fantastic.
I think so, too. And that's why it's fun. It's impactful. It's involving people. And you feel like you're making a difference.
Yeah, you're solving a problem. You're solving a problem that you might have functionally solved before, as you mentioned, but now you're really solving the patient's problem, which is, I want to use this piece of equipment. I want to have it on my body.
Exactly.
Sounds good. Well, since you're my very first episode that we're releasing after my graduation, every episode we do is a pint, but before we're done with our pint, we do shots, parting shots of wisdom. Is there something you want to impart upon the class of 2016 as we head out into the real world after working in PT school for 3 years? Some words of wisdom we should pay attention to?
Yeah, first of all, good luck.
Thank you.
Second of all, it is always about thinking about people as humans, you know, thinking about them and treating them in a way that you would want to be treated. So sometimes we get lost in our details, or people get lost in their research and they forget about the impact. And I say, you know, treat every patient as if, what if you were that patient? How would you want to be treated if it was you that had a stroke today? Would you want research that progresses and maybe 10 or 20 years from now has a solution? Or would you want a therapist that doesn't care about what it is that you want to do for fun in your everyday life and just, you know, gives you activities based on what they think are appropriate? Think about that person and how you would feel if you were in that situation and I would want to be treated. Then you start to light a fire under yourself and say, God, I better start caring about, is this person having fun? Is this meaningful for them? And I better start researching things a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to wait 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's important, especially for me anyway, as a new student and a fresh PT, is that right now, you know, I imagine first couple months in the clinic, I'm just going to make sure I don't do anything stupid, but to make sure I remember that, because that's the reason we went through 3 years of PT school, and we suffered through the late nights and the tons of tests and the insurmountable debt. The reason we did it was for those people that we're going to be working with.
Yeah, and it's a great profession. And you will make a difference in people's lives, and it will feel really good.
Can't wait.
So I think it's a good choice. It's worth it. It's worth the money. You'll pay it back. It's all worth it in the end.
Well, perfect. I'm going to put up some more information so people can just click away and find out more information about Sew Baby Sew from University of Delaware and get in touch with Michelle Lobo. I appreciate you coming on the show, and there's no way that this is the last time we're going to talk, because my guess is in a couple months we're going to hear another innovation out of your organization, and I want to catch up and spread the word about that too.
I hope so.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time out, and it was really good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a good time.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.